You're listening to Talking Travel with Roy Lowy and friends, the number one source for travel news, reviews, and in-depth travel journalism. Broadcasting live from Florida's Suncoast on WTMY Sunday Travel Radio. Don't forget you can listen to us online 24/7 at ttrn.com. And now, here's our host, the travel guy, Roy Lowy.
You're listening to Talking Travel on WTMY 1280 AM in sunny Sarasota. This is Roy Lowy. My guest is Mr. Bill Miller, who is the Senior Vice President, Strategic Partnerships for CheapoAir.com. Welcome to Talking Travel, Bill.
Thanks, Roy. Thanks for having me.
I guess the first question that comes to mind, and that you're probably asked more frequently than any other, is what is the difference with your booking engine or your website versus some of your competitors?
The biggest difference, and well, first of all, let me back up. We consider our competitors online travel sites as well as traditional travel agencies.
Right.
And the reason I say that is because the big difference that we have is we put our 800 phone number, our toll-free phone number, which is manned 24/7, 365, on our website on virtually every page that's there. And we encourage customers to call us, because what we find is we can help them more when we get them on the phone than simply them doing it online all the time by themselves.
And I think that is a big plus, because it's very hard to get a live person these days. And not only that, they might be looking at something, it's not really mindset, and when they are talking to somebody, they might just walk them into another package or another destination, which they may find a lot more appealing.
Exactly. And we have three call centers that are strategically located so that we can service customers all the time, and we find a lot of value in that.
Call centers in the U.S.?
Two in the U.S. and one internationally, yes.
Okay. I noticed on your website you also have an interesting feature called Top 25 Deals. Tell us a little bit about that.
Those are deals that we're out proactively searching for, deals for customers. And so we simply, on an ongoing basis, we do research, we look at markets that our customers are interested in shopping and buying for, and we continually go out and look for good deals, good fares out there, and there's good fares to be had.
You also have other buttons up there. One of them, as in many of the sites, is hotels. Do you have arrangements with these hotels directly, or are they click-throughs, or are they part of your alliance?
We get hotel rates from various sources, multiple sources. We don't click through to the hotel website directly.
Right.
When you go to that button.
Right.
We are getting rates from our suppliers, and we've got deals with hotels directly. We've got deals with hotel distribution companies. We've got various arrangements where we get these hotel rates.
Okay, so they're your rates. They're not pass-throughs to some of the other sites or booking engines.
Correct. We don't go to the hotel website directly.
Right.
We'll get rates from various hotel suppliers.
Obviously, you do the research and see how competitive they are.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yes, absolutely.
There's an interesting note that was sent to me and very close to my heart. And it's industry consolidations and its effects on distribution. Let's talk about that for a little bit, if you will.
Sure. The travel industry, as you know, and I've been in it for 22 years, so I've seen a lot of change. It's changed fairly dramatically over the last several years as well for a variety of reasons. The big one is the economic recession we've seen over the last 18 to 24 months. You know, there's been a downturn. It was starting to happen even before last September.
Right.
And the airlines have been particularly hard hit, and we've seen recent things in the airline business. For instance, it impacted Hawaii pretty heavily.
With that ATA going out. Yeah,
ATA went out. This was March of 2008.
Right.
In the spring of 2008, ATA went out, and then a tour operator went out, and another one of the Hawaiian airlines.
I think North American pulled out some years ago as well.
Yeah, and so things like that happening in specific market causes real pain for that specific market. Hawaii still hasn't, pulled out of that yet, and they probably won't for a few more years. And then we're seeing large-scale consolidation, like the merger between Delta and Northwest.
Right.
And you take Northwest, which has large hubs in Minneapolis, Memphis, and Detroit, combining that with Delta, having large hubs in Atlanta, Cincinnati, and Salt Lake City, and all of a sudden you've got this, really large airline now that has to take all this capacity and figure out how to effectively sell it.
Right.
For instance, I fly a lot between Dallas and New York, and so I watch those fares, fairly frequently, and I kind of know what the fare structure is, and I can be somewhat flexible in my travel, but I can generally find something around $300, give or take $50 to $75.
Uh-huh.
And most of the time I'll fly on American because, they've got a big, huge, frequency here in Dallas.
Right.
But the last time I was looking, Delta had dropped a $150 round-trip fare into the Dallas-New York market, and that was to fly over Memphis, which is a fairly convenient connection. And so they're starting to tactically do some things to really try to move some seats.
People seem to be accepting the stopover, whether it be Charlotte, Atlanta, as Delta does, and some of the others. Just to save $100, they seem prepared to do that.
And in today's time, especially for a business traveler, it's much more accepted because business travelers are it's much easier to be connected even when you're connecting on an air flight, if you pardon the pun on words there.
Exactly.
But, with a BlackBerry and with their laptop,
right.
I mean, they can connect and sit for an hour in an airport, and it's like they can still be in their office.
It interesting as well, because the last week I spoke with someone who is offering a service whereby you can get any delays sent directly to your BlackBerry,
yeah.
And they monitor all this. They do some forecast based, I guess, on the airport. If you want to look at Atlanta, you can pretty much say there's a chance that you're going to be sitting out in the tarmac for a while.
Yeah, and so we recognize all that at Cheapo Air, and bottom line is, at Cheapo Air, we're going to look for the best rates because we know consumers are looking for that.
Right. Well, I'm an old Freddie Laker guy. I was with him a good part of
sure.
my adult life in the airline industry, and as you know, he started the SkyTrain concept, and which is, for better or worse, is why we have low-cost carriers today.
Uh-huh.
And he said to me many, many years ago that he felt that at some point there were only going to be a few major airlines in the world because of consolidation.
That's hard to predict. I mean, you now have these large alliances, the One World, the SkyTeam. You got these large alliances that they're starting to behave more and more like a single airline. I just don't know if the various countries will ever allow the equity participation in each other's carriers to do that. And so, I don't know if I have that same vision, but
right.
I certainly think there is still some more consolidation to happen. And then you're also getting some new, still relatively new carriers, like a JetBlue. JetBlue's what, 8-9 years old, something like that?
Right.
And they're starting to look a little bit like some of the traditional carriers. For instance, they just announced a codeshare with Lufthansa. So Lufthansa's going to feed their traffic into Boston and New York, and then put it onto JetBlue for other points in the country.
Well, I thought that was an interesting move because, three-quarters of the United States population live in that northeastern megalopolis.
Yeah, and they're going to start selling through ARC, which is a fairly traditional airline establishment that's been around for a long time. So, while they're very innovative, JetBlue is, still new to the business. They're very innovative. They do some really cool things. But they're also starting to take on some traditional things that some of the large carriers do.
What trends do you see in airline pricing? Because we're seeing so many unusual things happening in terms of the European fares have dropped sizably. Everybody's just reaching out, coming up with all kinds of different gimmicks and passes now. How do you see that progressing in the next year or so?
The European carriers were a bit ahead of the U.S. carriers in terms of selling non-core travel, selling bottles of water on the airplane, selling meals on the airplane, selling advertising space on the drop-down trays, you know, charging for check bags and things like that. They were a bit ahead of us, and that was due to carriers like EasyJet and Go and Ryanair, and I mean, there's a whole host of low-cost carriers. I mean, Wizz Air, Thomson Fly, there's a lot of them out there that would fly to secondary airports, and, you know, they'd fly from London Stansted to, you know, other, you know, secondary airports, and it would economically help them because rents were less at those airports. It was a more of a low-cost operation for them, and they could draw traffic. And so those carriers are now starting to mature, and we're, you know, a few years behind them, and we're seeing our carriers starting to charge for non-core travel essentials, a checking bag and meals on airplanes and internet and things like that. And so, you know, these European carriers, they're still making money. Some of them are starting to see some of the larger carriers like a British Airways, Lufthansa, things like that, starting to get down closer to their cost structure. So, you know, it's an evolution process, and it's you know, supply and demand. It's just pure competition.
Bill, we're almost out of time, but I have one quick question. What do you think the public's reaction is going to be? Do you think they're going to just get fed up with all of this? Because recently I read an article, somebody did a study on the Wi-Fi, and they find out that even if they charged a dollar, that the number of people that used it dropped considerably.
Yeah, it's still very early, and my opinion is that the jury's still out on it. Intuitively, I would think that your long-haul flights are going to do much better. You know, if I'm flying from Atlanta to Miami, that's, you know, what, hour and 15-minute flight?
Right.
You take off, you're 15 minutes into flight before you can even boot up a laptop.
Right.
And then, you know, as you get close to Miami, 15 minutes before you land, you got to shut it down. And so does it make sense to have it open for half an hour for whatever they were charged? Don't know.
Yeah.
And so I think the jury's still out on it. I was on a flight a couple of years ago from the U.S. to Frankfurt, and I used the internet. It was, and at the time, it was like a $30 fee, but it was a, you know, 8-hour flight. But I had a lot of work I needed to get done. It was fantastic.
Bill, I thank you. Can you give us the website, please, and the phone number, if you will?
Absolutely. It's cheapoair.com, and our toll-free number is 866-592-9685.
Well, my guest has been Bill Miller, the Senior Vice President, Strategic Partnerships for CheapoAir.com. Thank you very much, Bill.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Bye for now.
So you want to stop smoking. Well, here's what I want you to do. Go to a drugstore and take a stop smoking product off the shelf. Go to the cashier. Tell him you don't want to pay for the product. You just want to take it home and try it. And if, and only if, you stop smoking, will you then come back and pay for it? Most likely, if you tried this, you'd be arrested. But as silly as this sounds, this is exactly what the Smoke-Free free trial offer is. Smoke-Free is a complete all-natural stop smoking system. And when you call today, they will send you a 30-day supply of the program absolutely free. This program eliminates withdrawals, cravings, and includes a 30-day supply of the Smoke-Free capsules, a guide to living smoke-free book, an audio support program, a capsule holder, and a bottle of weight loss capsules, just in case you are worried about gaining weight while you're trying to quit. To find out if you qualify for this free trial offer, join the tens of thousands who have quit for life with Smoke-Free.
Call 1-800-210-0311 today. That's 1-800-210-0311. This is a limited-time offer. Call 1-800-210-0311 now.
This is Roy Lowy, and you're listening to Talking Travel on WTMY 1280 in sunny Sarasota and on TTRN.com. My next guest is Lisa Codian Fowler, and we're going to chat about an article she's done for Travel World International magazine, and she calls it Getting Personal in the British Virgin Islands. Thank you for joining Talking Travel, Lisa.
Thanks, Roy. It's always a pleasure joining you on the show.
Virgin Islands, beautiful place. The U.S. and the British Virgin Islands are beautiful. Now, you went down there to do a couple of cruises on various sailboats. Why don't we start with the first one you did? First of all, where did you go? You went to Tortola?
We started out from Tortola, and as you mentioned, the islands are quite beautiful, and I had sailed there many times, and I sailed on with corporate charter companies many times, but never with an organization such as the one that we booked this trip through.
Now, what charter company did you use?
It's called the Charter Yacht Society of the BBI, and it's very different from the larger fleets because it's a nonprofit organization, and it's all-inclusive, it's total luxury, and it represents the cream of the crop. All of their yachts are independently owned, and mostly are owner-operated, or when the owners are not chartering the boats themselves, they have hand-picked, very carefully hand-picked their crews. So from the vessels to the crews, everything is first class. And their fleet ranges from 42-foot monohulls to 105-foot monohulls, which are floating five-star hotels.
And now, these are all inclusive, is that correct?
Yes, everything is included when you book with them. The food, alcoholic and non-alcoholic beverages, all the water sports equipment. Once you book, it's all covered. You're done, and you don't have to think about anything else. And before you book, and I realize I'm just going on and on about this, it's just so exciting and a new discovery for me, they send you a food preference sheet. So you list the foods that you love, that you don't like, that you're allergic to, even your bar preferences. So once you get on board, you know that you're going to enjoy all of the meals.
Now, do they also send you some optional itineraries?
You can, yes. That's an option. We let our captains, which this is an option too, let your captain chart your course. We were fortunate in that the two yachts that we sailed aboard, the captains of each coordinated our itinerary so that we didn't see anything twice. We got to see as much as possible in the time we were there.
So you didn't have to do anything but just kick back and enjoy.
Yeah, kick back, ask for another painkiller, which is a drink, by the way. A signature drink of the BVI's.
Ah, that's what a painkiller is.
With rum and coconut and orange juice and nutmeg, I think. It's wonderful. We had a lot of those. So that's what we did. We ate, we drank, we swam, we snorkeled. We got to know our crew. And the first boat that we were on was called the Nutmeg. And our hosts were Sandy and Eleanor. And I tell you, we hit it off right from the minute we met. They're from South Africa. And they leave their home in South Africa every year in season to come and charter this boat. They don't own it, but they were, again, hand-picked to crew this particular cat, which is a 50-foot.
Were they a retired couple, and this was what they do for their spare time, or?
You know, I actually don't know what they do when they're back at home.
Okay.
They may be retired. They have sailed the world. They're veteran sailors. They did it on their own. But because they enjoy the people, they decided to do this in season because they get energy from their guests who are always fun, enthusiastic people. And they said that, you know, people that do this type of trip, everyone that comes aboard, they like to have fun.
Now, what was the boat like?
The boat was absolutely gorgeous. It had four guest rooms, and each guest room has air conditioning, flat screen TVs, ensuite heads and showers, very, very totally comfortable. The salon was very spacious. There was a cute little corner bar, which we frequented. And then on deck, the deck was huge, and that was the design of this particular boat was to maximize the on-deck space. So you had areas where you could sit in the shade or you could sun. The trampoline, people who aren't familiar with catamarans, but it's sort of a heavy netting that stretched from one side of the boat to the other, from one hull to the other, and in between is just water. You can lie on the trampoline, look down through the netting, watch the waters passing beneath you, and every now and then get what they call a cat slap, where the water comes up and sort of slaps you, but it's very refreshing, even though it is sometimes surprising.
Yeah, but it cools you down in the warm sun. Yeah, that's very nice. Now, how long were you on this boat?
This boat, well, like I said, we were on each boat for two nights. And we started off our first night. We sailed through, we went to North Sound, and that's a very popular area for charterers with, that's where Leverett Bay is, and the Bitter End Yacht Club, Byrus Creek Resort. And people, there are lots and lots of boats in the harbor close to shore, and people traditionally boat hop. Strangers just, you know, go from boat to boat, party, get to know each other, have a good time, and it's really, really fun and lively. But we were having so much fun with Sandy and Eleanor, we just wanted to hang out with them. So we anchored further out, and we decided to grill off the side of the boat. They did a wonderful filet mignon with butter sauce, I'm sorry, a mushroom sauce, and fresh veggies, and Eleanor did a chocolate mousse with Cointreau, which was outstanding, with Oreo cookies crumbled on it. And that's another thing. The people that are on these boats, whether they own the boat or they're hired crew, a lot of them are trained in the culinary arts. So you're not only getting food you like, but you're getting it prepared in a very, very exquisite way.
Just a thought crossed my mind. You know, when you go on a cruise ship, they have this safety drill. Do they give you a few safety hints in case one of those painkillers you have one too many and fall off the back of the boat?
Actually, no.
Interesting, huh?
I guess they just throw you a
buoy or something.
Well, fortunately, that wasn't a concern.
Well, that's good. I think that's good.
It is good.
What was your first stop?
The very first stop where we went ashore was the next morning, and that was to Anegada.
It's where all the great lobsters come from.
Oh, they are great. It's a really remote, windswept island known for its lobster, and not everybody gets to go there because only experienced sailors are permitted there.
Yeah, it's a little tricky getting in and out of there, yeah.
It is tricky, and it's kind of far away. I'm not sure, but I believe it's the longest sail to and from that island than anywhere else in the area. On the Cat, it just took us a couple of hours, and that was kind of cool because we got to enjoy the beautiful sail, the flying fish, and there were whales. We didn't see whales, but we did see dolphin.
Yeah, it's kind of fun when you see the dolphins that's sitting in front of your hull as if they were... They're saying, follow me, or they're just trying to race you, you know. It's beautiful. And the waters, as we know, you can see down 100 feet. It's just incredibly clear.
It is incredibly clear. And one thing that I had forgotten, which I think I had mentioned to you earlier, is how, I guess, I don't know if there's a higher salt content, but it feels like you cannot sink. You just float. It's the most amazing thing.
I think it was the painkillers.
Well, back to Anegada. So the thing that was great about getting there so quickly is it gave us a full day to enjoy the island, to explore. We went snorkeling. Of course, we stopped for a painkiller at a beachside bar, did a little shopping at a teeny tiny boutique there. And because it's known for lobster, as you mentioned, we decided to all go out to dinner that evening at a place called Whispering Pines Resort. And the tables were outside right at the water's edge. So we had starlight, moonlight, candlelight, and this fabulous dinner. Probably not only one of the best lobster dinners I've ever had, but one of the best dinners I've ever had. It was really
And that's saying something because I know your husband is a fabulous chef. I mean, it's not what he does for a living necessarily, but I've experienced some of his creations, and they're quite wonderful.
Well, thank you. And because he is a good cook, and he actually has been a professional chef, he's pretty picky when it comes to food, and even he voted this a 5-star meal. You can't beat those fresh 2-pound lobsters, that's for sure.
Now, so that was, where did you go from there? You were at Whispering Pines.
We went to Whispering Pines, Anegada. We spent the night there.
And you went over to Virgin Gorda, where they have baths in the caves, right?
Yeah, we did that. That was our next morning and our last morning aboard Nutmeg. They took us to the baths, which, as you know, but others may not, they're huge boulders that sheltered these cool pools of water. So it's great to kind of, you walk through and you swim in this cool water and you kind of climb the rocks. It's almost like Disney, but it's real.
In the first part of your trip, you were on a catamaran. Now, on the second part, was it also a catamaran or a different type of ship?
It was a catamaran, but it was a totally different design, and I had never been on a cat before.
Right.
I would have thought they were all the same. This one was owner-operated, and it was called the Blue Bayou. It was smaller in length, 44 feet, but the design, it was designed to have optimum space on the interior, because Wally and Ruth, who own the boat and who were our hosts, actually live there. And it's funny, they used to live in Sarasota, just minutes from our house.
My goodness.
Over at the Meadows.
My goodness.
They're friends with Brian Johnson, Brian and Brenda Johnson, AC/DC rock star and Sarasota residents. Their friends had invited them to sail with them on a vacation. Wally and Ruth fell so in love with the area and the lifestyle, they came back to Sarasota, sold everything, and ordered this customized, luxurious cat. I mean, they put in custom wine racks and pantries, and so the interior is actually more spacious because it's where they live. It's their home.
But so they actually live on the boat.
Yes, it's their home year-round.
Right. So they're based at the Bitter End Yacht Club in Tortola, is it at another yacht club but in the same area? Or
I believe they're based in Tortola.
Well, yeah, they would be in Tortola. It's just a matter of whether the Bitter End Yacht Club is one of the better-known providers of, you know, sailboats.
The Blue Bayou is, again, a part of the fleet. They belong to the Charter Yacht Society, which, as I mentioned last week, is a nonprofit organization of independents.
I see. Okay.
They're all these yachts are independently owned, and the society promotes them and speaks for them. And they have quite an interest in the area, the environment. It's a really great organization. And, they represent the cream of the crop.
Lisa has been sailing through the British Virgin Islands. And on the first part of her journey, she was on the Blue Bayou. Is that the correct name?
The first part was on the Nutmeg.
Oh, the first part was on the Nutmeg. And this part is on the Blue Bayou. Is that it?
Yeah, and the transition was seamless. We finished up our trip with Nutmeg and Sandy and Eleanor of Nutmeg at the baths, and there was Blue Bayou, Ruth and Wally, waiting for us, and they kindly invited Sandy and Eleanor on board, and all six of us had a wonderful lunch that Ruth made of chicken curry salad, and of course there's fresh fruit is abundant in the islands, and we've had a lot of that.
And the painkillers again?
Well, actually we had Pinot Grigio to go with our...
For those that didn't hear this, the painkillers are a traditional drink that they make in the British Virgin Islands. Now, so did you overnight at one of the hotels, or did you do that at the end of your trip?
We did that at the end, and I've done that before on sailing trips. I really recommend it. It's a nice way, and I hate to say this, to wind down, because you're winding down from winding down. But it's really nice to end up your stay, your sailing adventure.
So you went from the Blue Bayou directly on to the Nutmeg.
We went...
Did I get it backwards?
We went from the Nutmeg to the Blue Bayou.
All right, well, I'll get my spices straight here. I need one of those painkillers.
I think you do. And they had coordinated, the captains of both boats had coordinated our trip so that we got to see all different islands and adventures, and they took us to a place called Willie T's, which is it used to be a ship, but now it's a stationary restaurant and bar.
And where is that?
That was at Norman Island, the Bight at Norman Island. That was our first stop with them.
Right.
They took us snorkeling at the caves in the morning, which you must have done that when you lived there.
Yes.
So you know how gorgeous the marine life is.
Absolutely
there.
Beautiful.
Yeah, and then we went to your old home, Joost van Dyk.
Uh-huh. That's where I lived for a couple of years.
Than a couple. How many years was it?
I don't know. I don't keep track of years anymore.
I think you said it was eight or something.
No, it wasn't quite that long. I spent most... that. That was the Dominican Republic, but on Yost I was there for about 2 years, just long enough to grow up. Anyway, so you went to Norman Island, and then you went from there to Yost.
Yes, and right. That's where we experienced Foxy's, your old haunt.
Yeah,
right?
My old haunt.
And I don't know, there were a couple of other cute little beach bars and restaurants there with little gift shops. One was called One Love,
uh-huh.
And the other is the Soggy Dollar.
The Soggy Dollar. Well, you know, that makes sense, because if you think about it, when you get off a boat, usually you're out a little bit. There aren't really any much dock space to tie up, so you're going to jump in the water. So when you get into the bar, most everybody's money is wet. So a soggy dollar is probably what it's all about.
Well, and that's true. They're right on the beach, and most people are just wearing bathing suits, and they're alternately, you know, jumping in the water.
Right. And, you know, you got to wade in, usually.
Yes.
And so you go to the soggy dollar and spend your soggy dollars. Isn't it? You know, a lot of places don't take soggy dollars in Sarasota.
Well, they've got dollar bills all over the wall. And that was a really... And then, of course, is it Foxy's? Or Soggy Dollar. There's a hammock on the beach, and you can just kind of chill out there, and it's a very relaxing place to be. And as the night, as it gets later in the day and into the night, it really kicks up a notch. There's live music, and people dance, and it's a really hopping, happening kind of place. In contrast with where we went the next day, which is a little islet, I guess. It's called Sandy Key.
Right.
And it's desolate. And it's actually a national park. Rockefeller owned and donated it to, it's uninhabited, and he donated it to the government, stipulating that it become and remain a national park.
Yeah, the Rockefellers owned a lot of property down there.
I gather.
A lot of those islands, including some in the U.S. Virgin Islands, and part of it a national park, part of it was obviously sold off. But yes, I can see... Anybody with any money and time, the Virgin Islands, whether it's the BVI or even the U.S. VI, the islands are absolutely beautiful, one right after the other, and it's breathtaking, as you say. So you went over to Sandy Key.
And we walked through nature trails, and it was so quiet. Again, in contrast with the day before, the night before at Yost, it was so quiet. All you could hear... must have been hundreds of turtle doves singing. It was so beautiful. There were wildflowers, there were prickly pear cactus and irises, and just totally natural and so unspoiled, and I'm so glad it will always remain that way, hopefully.
And lots of pretty colors.
Oh, just beautiful, brilliant colors of flowers. And then, of course, the beach is gorgeous and clean, and the water, like you said, is so crystal clear.
Now, from Sandy Key, where did you go?
Well, unfortunately, the next day, or is that the same day, we went to, that was when we had to say goodbye
right.
to our hosts, and we went to Soper's Hole.
Okay.
And that's where Pusser's is, Pusser's Rum.
One of the best.
One of the best. And we went to their restaurant and gift shop, and then that's where we said goodbye to Wally and Ruthie June, which was kind of sad. Of course, we... invited them to come see us if they ever come back to Sarasota. And then we took a taxi over to the Sugar Mill Hotel, which is...
Before you go to the Sugar Mill, let me ask you a question. How long have they been living in the BVI?
Just a year.
A year.
So this was
a new thing for them.
Yes.
So, and so far they were loving it, huh?
Oh, yes. And again, one of the reasons they love it, just like Sandy and Eleanor from the Nutmeg... is the people that they meet.
Right.
And these people, you know, these crews themselves are very colorful characters and have lots of stories to tell, but a lot of those stories have to do with their charter guests.
Right, exactly. Right. Well, that's great. So now you've just spent a fair amount of time checking out the islands, and you're going to spend a night, or is it, at one of the properties?
Our last two nights we spent on land... on Tortola, at a little intimate boutique resort called the Sugar Mill Hotel. And it's actually a 370 four-year-old sugar mill that was converted to this handful of accommodations and a restaurant that is consistently voted the very most romantic in the entire Caribbean.
Oh, how about that?
Yes.
Oh, my goodness.
It's got a little beach, but then the beach is on one side of the road, and they have a beachside bistro for casual dining. Cross the road, you get to the main portion of it where the restaurant is, and then you just kind of step up into the hills to each level of accommodation. We were at the very top in what was called a deluxe studio. They've got suites and cottages and studios, but we were at the top, so we had a wonderful panoramic view.
And you say that in your article that it the photo's choice of resorts on Tortola.
Yes, and it's garnered so many awards. I didn't even have room in my article to mention them, but if you can think of an award, they've won it.
That's great. And so what about the accommodations?
Like I said, we were in a deluxe studio. They have cottages. They have they've got a deluxe villa, which is a freestanding house with a full kitchen.
How many rooms or and villas did they have? It was a sugar mill. Couldn't have been too big.
About 20 or so.
Oh, okay. So as you say in your article, it's a boutique hotel, and I would think that what a sugar mill would be.
Yeah, they say, what did they call themselves? A special place for a few special people.
There you go. So you stayed there, and we're getting to food, and we do this at every show when it's time to eat. So what about the dining?
The dining. Well, first of all, the ambiance is spectacular. Obviously, otherwise it wouldn't be voted the most romantic restaurant. With the stone walls, there's Caribbean artwork on the walls, there's flowers everywhere, and candlelight, and the tables all have tablecloths and, you know, fine linens. But the food, on top of all that beautiful ambiance, they serve things. They change the menu nightly. And the menu is designed by their chefs along with the owners of the property, who are Jeff and Jinx Morgan, and they are columnists for Bon Appetit. And a typical evening selection might be, it might begin with lobster bisque and basil croutons, shrimp and vegetable skewers served over caramelized pineapple salsa. The main courses might be salmon wrapped in leek with petit pois emulsion, poached lobster salad a la niçoise. You get the idea. They also serve
things you wouldn't expect that you're going to find in a small little island hotel. You know, it's amazing. You got over to Cane Garden Bay, right?
Briefly, we did take an island tour. Sugar Mill was our headquarters, and for the last 2 days. And from there, we took a tour. Again, another activity that I do recommend, because you learn about the culture and the history of the island. And yes, we went to Cane Garden Bay. We went to this distillery, Caldwell's Distillery. Are you familiar with that?
Yeah, you know, I saw it in your article. I know the family, but I wasn't aware that they were making rum there for 200 years.
Yes, and it's great.
How did
rum.
I miss that?
I don't know. How did you?
I don't know. Must have been my beer drinking days or something.
Yeah, that's where they're located, at Cane Garden Bay. So we had a nice overview of Tortola.
All right. Well, tell us a little bit. Tell our audience a little bit on how they can get some more information on a journey like this, the cruises and staying on the islands. Are there some websites that you'd like to recommend?
Yes, the best one to learn about the Yacht Charter Society is bvicrudeyachts.com. And what you'll find there, and why I say it's the best, is because you can look at all of the vessels in the fleet. You can look at the bios of the owners or the crew. You can look at the menus, even sample menus. You can see the layouts of the boats, and you can book through that site using the best way to do it, as I understand it, is using a yacht broker, and they have a list of brokers on the site. And
good.
The thing that's great about the brokers is they can match they're experts at matching the guests with the right crew, and good. There's no additional cost for their service.
Now, how about the sugar mill?
Sugarmillhotel.com.
Okay. And
British Virgin Islands, BVITourism.com.
Great. Well, Lisa, it sounds like a wonderful experience. I'm sorry I missed this one. This would have been great fun. My guest has been Lisa Codian Fowler, She's written an article for Travel World International magazine. The name of the article is Getting Personal in the British Virgin Islands. Lisa, it's been a pleasure, always a pleasure, and thank you for sharing this all with us.
Thank you.
Bye for now.
Bye-bye.
Do you suffer from chronic pain, severe arthritis, joint pain, or fibromyalgia? Living every day in pain can make you depressed, fatigued, and moody. You can even be losing sleep. Well, I can help you stop the pain today with a free sample of Pain Free. Pain Free is a revolutionary new safe and effective cream that uses the natural power of glucosamine and chondroitin sulfate. Simply rub Pain Free on the skin and your body will naturally melt away the pain fast. Get your free supply of Pain Free now and see if Pain Free is right for you. Only pay shipping and handling.
Just call Pain Free toll free at 1-877-283-3445. That's 1-877-283-3445.
Pain Free is trusted by professional athletes for quick pain relief. So free yourself from depression, fatigue, and chronic pain for only the cost of shipping and handling.
Just call Pain Free toll free at 1-877-283-3445. That's 1-877-283-3445.
Are you watching your blood sugar levels and how much it changes after meals? Get some help from Enhancelin, the natural dietary supplement that, when taken before meals, reduces the amount of sugar getting into your body. Enhancelin customers say it best.
Enhancelin does balance out my blood sugar.
With Enhancelin, I can smile again.
Satisfaction guaranteed or your money back. So call 1-800-997-5717. For a limited time, receive a free 30-day supply of Enhancelin with your order. Call 1-800-997-5717.
You're listening to Talking Travel on WTMY 1280 in beautiful, sunny Sarasota. My guest is Clayton Anderson, and he's with Adventure Canada. Now, I hadn't heard of Adventure Canada, but I must tell you, when I went to their website and I read some of their material, I was really quite astounded. It was founded in 1987, and they have some extraordinary, really extraordinary trips. If you will, Clayton, let's chat about it and fill our audience in on Adventure Canada.
Absolutely. Okay, well, you're right. We did start operations in 1987. And so for the past 21 years, we've been doing small ship expeditions around the world. Our main focus has been for the last 20 years in the Canadian Arctic and Greenland and the newly formed territory of Nunavut in Canada, which is celebrating its 10th year this year. So we operate on small kind of research vessels, 120 passengers or less, and we're well known for our educational program. We have, with 120 passengers, about 12 to 15 resource staff, and they run the gamut from everywhere, from archaeologists to marine biologists to musicians, writers, photographers, and they are there to lecture during our trips.
I like your statement. It is our belief that there is much to see beyond the binoculars.
For sure.
And I guess that's how you got into a lot of this. Now, the company has won a lot of awards here.
Yeah, no, we've been winning quite a few awards over the last few years. We've garnered a lot of international notice. National Geographic Adventure magazine rated us one of the best adventure travel companies on Earth. Also, we won a Cruise Vision Award from Newfoundland and Labrador, where we operate a circumnavigation cruise over there. Nunavut Tourism also gave us a Tourism Excellence Award for 2008. And then we won the Travel Industry Association of Canada National Award as Business of the Year. So it's been an award-winning year for us, for sure.
That's great.
Yeah, it's been fantastic. I mean, I think there's been a lot more interest in the Arctic and in the North in the last 4 or 5 years. And so it's really starting to garner some attention.
Now, you travel by small expedition ships. Is that
yep.
the way it's done?
Yep, for sure. They're ice-strengthened. They're ice class 1A is what it's called. So we can get through some ice up there in the Arctic when we need to, which really adds to the excitement. And, yeah, it's they're generally, some of them are Russian ships. The one we're using this year is the Clipper Adventurer, and it had a $14 million renovation not too long ago. So it's traveling in style, but it's still that expeditionary experience with only 120 people or so.
You have a team of expeditionary staff, and I would assume you match these up to the various trips, obviously.
Yeah.
Just give us an idea of the type of trip one could expect to experience with a staff member that would be chosen for that particular expedition.
Sorry, which staff?
Well, I mean, in other words, when one either arrives at the destination or gets at the ship, these are escorted tours, I'm assuming.
Oh, absolutely. Okay, yeah. So yeah, I get the nature of your question. Very often we're off the ship on expeditionary stops, very often on the tundra, for example, in the middle of nowhere. And because we've got a variety of different staff members, the photographers can go in one direction with the photographic guide. The people interested in archaeology would go off with one of our archaeologists. And, you know, the super hikers would go off in one direction that just want to kind of hike the whole time. And then, you know, botany, pretty much anything that is covered on our trips, we can break into smaller groups once we're on land. So you end up with 10 to 15 people in each group that is really a lot more geared towards their specific interest group.
It's interesting you say art is adventure. That's very true. And you have a photo wild program. So it isn't just necessarily getting out there and doing a dig.
Oh, not at all. In fact, our average age on our Arctic trips is 61.
Is that right?
Yeah, so it we call it soft adventure. We're not bungee jumping naked off bridges or anything like
right.
that. It's more of a it's more of a 60 year old sort of adventure, which can be quite adventurous with our people. And so something like the Heart of the Arctic that we do is mainly it's focused around the art in the Arctic. We get into places like Pangnirtung, which is famous for its printmaking. We go to Cape Dorset, which is famous for its sculpture, and we have an artist on board that also will teach people the various techniques that are used up there, both in sculpture and in printmaking. So we do kind of workshops on board for people that are interested. So that sort of brings the art of the region to the people who are traveling.
I like your statement about comparing ecotourism. We've used that term now. I always use soft adventure. Then ecotourism came out. Now it's all about green tourism, which drives me crazy. Everything is green these days.
Oh, yeah.
I guess unless you live in the desert, you can still be green if you're, environmentally friendly.
Absolutely.
But the thing is that what you're all about really is sustainable tourism. The only thing that I take issue with is it says if you travel to a destination on a jet, we're having an impact on the environment. Well, that's very true, and what you're doing isn't on a jet, but in order to get where you are, somebody's probably going to have to fly there. So,
well, yeah, and we are using ship as well, which does use fossil fuels.
I think
the main point that we have towards sustainable tourism is that we're bringing people up and having them experience the North firsthand, and they're not inexpensive trips. I mean, people with means and people with influence tend to take our trips as well, and when they're up there and just blown away by the landscapes and by the interacting with the local Inuit and finding out that glaciers that used to have names that are no longer there, people bring back that heightened awareness, and they bring it back to their peer groups, and they really do bring kind of a changed attitude back south. And then as well, we've had instances where we've run into 60 bowhead whales in a bay up there that was looking to be protected, and we had someone pull out a checkbook and write a $200,000 check to help protect that area. So while we are burning some fossil fuels up there, we're definitely adding to the global awareness of the issues in the Canadian Arctic.
That's terrific. Now, summer's coming up.
Yep.
What's on your agenda for the summer?
Well, really, we start our Arctic cruising schedule in August 9th. So, and that's mainly a Greenland itinerary that then goes into the beginning of the Northwest Passage. That runs from the 9th till the 21st. We then have more of an into the Northwest Passage, which goes right in through the traditional Northwest Passage route and ends in Cambridge Bay. Then we have an out of the Northwest Passage that follows the top part of the passage. And then we go down into the heart of the Arctic that I was talking about earlier, the art communities of the southern Baffin Island. So we've got four back-to-back trips there, and then we do a trip down the coast of Labrador, which is an arts float. It's a new concept we're working on that basically doubles up all the artsy people on and tries to foster a kind of creative environment for people to work between each other and between the musicians and the sculptors and the artists and the writers and all that to try and create something on board. And it's a kind of a little bit of a hippie ideal, but we've had some good interest in it for sure.
Since your groups and your companies spend so much time in the Arctic and at the poles, of course, there's a lot of talk now, you know, about this, the big hole and the Arctic and the South Pole melting. Mm-hmm. There are many of us that have been around for a while that seems to think this is a natural phenomenon rather than necessarily a self-caused one, and I won't get into that discussion. But do you see much of a change that, you know, over these last few years? Do you see much of a change recently than you've seen before?
Well, I mean, we've seen some of those big chunks that have been breaking off at the very north in the pack ice there. And, you know, we've actually been following them coming through.
Right.
So, I mean, that's been kind of a big change there. But I think the biggest change has been talking to the, like, when we visit the communities and talk to the Inuit leaders there, that, you know, some of them are in their 70s and 80s, the elders from the Inuit communities.
Right.
And they've absolutely seen it. I mean, there's no doubt in their minds that it's not like it used to be when they were younger, for sure.
And it's
hard for us to judge in, you know, 5 or 10 or 15 years, but when you get someone who's lived on the land for 80 years, I mean, it's definitely a moving experience to hear them talk about the melting up there.
What's interesting is that you know, there's always the argument of whether it's a natural phenomenon or not, and of course, I don't suppose we'll really ever have an answer to that.
Well, I'm quite sure it's not a natural phenomenon. But but once again, we won't get into that.
Right.
But we've definitely seen, regardless of where it's coming from, there is an issue going on up there.
And exactly. And I think that it's smart for us to do what we can in our environment and everywhere, whether it's in the poles or just in your local neighborhood. You know, people should be a little bit more neighborhood friendly and maybe not throw their trash in the street for one.
For sure.
If you will, please give our listeners a website and maybe a phone number.
Sure.
So they can have a look at these just extraordinary programs that you're offering.
Absolutely. They can find us at www.adventurecanada, and that's all one word, .com, or they can reach us by phone at 1-800-363-7566 or locally at 905-271-4000. So any of those will get to you. AdventureCanada.com would have the most up-to-date information on it, and you can get a look for all our programming in the Arctic and outside of it as well.
Yeah, that's the one I'm on, and it also shows staff members, and it's a very it looks like a very user-friendly site.
And yeah, we're working on it, like every other website.
And I see you've got your award up there. Very good. But what I like is the best adventure travel companies on Earth.
Yeah.
That's a pretty strong statement.
Well, I mean, yeah, it's they rated National Geographic Adventure magazine rated all the a variety of different travel companies, and we rated a 90.2 on their site. So we're pretty proud of that.
I would think so. Yep. My guest has been Clayton Anderson with Adventure Canada, and I thank you, Clayton.
Thank you very much, Roy.
A pleasure. Bye.
All right. Take care.
And for all you savvy travelers out there listening, you may want to tune in to WTMY's all-news travel radio. Yours truly, Roy Lowy, will host Talking Travel, from travel journalists reporting from around the world, what's hot, what's not, single travel, single parents with kids, the best online travel sites. Our consumer advocates will even be on the job to resolve issues that you may have, and we'll cover it right here on WTMY. So if you want the latest travel info, we'll be here and hope you will join us right here on WTMY 1280. You're listening to Talking Travel with Roy Lowy, and I'm your travel guy.